Welcome or welcome back to the FCC. My name is Tara Joseph. I'm a Reuters journalist and a convener of the professional committee of the club. We're very glad to have you here today. If I could just ask you to please put your phones on silent. As you can see, there are a lot of media occupying the FCC right now, and we'd like to make sure they can record comfortably. Also, though, we do welcome you to tweet while you're here. We're trying to expand our use of social media in our club with a very long history. And please do include our address, which is at FCCHK, if you're tweeting as the session goes on. Now, will Hong Kong ever have genuine democracy? Our speaker today, Benny Tai, is well known in Hong Kong and has been making international headlines as we hear about protests for people asking for more democracy, students in the street and boycotting classes this week. And I think Benny is readying for one of the biggest civil disobedience campaigns Hong Kong has seen in many, many years. He's super relaxed today, which I find amazing. I did ask him how he feels, and he said it's like being in the last mile of a marathon race, getting ready for next week. Just a little bit of background on Benny Tai, who many of you may have seen around in the streets and in the media. He is working, teaching at Hong Kong U, the law faculty there. He has three children, one of whom is down at Tamar as we speak. I think he's working out with his family who's going to be at what part of Central during next week. So a lot of family planning going on. We will make sure we have time for Q&A, but now it's my pleasure to welcome Benny Tai.
Thank you, Tara. Justin and I have a great lunch, and we are now preparing the biggest banquet in town and ever in Hong Kong's history. This banquet that we're going to have will be a banquet of democracy, and people joining this banquet actually has to pay quite a lot to join the banquet. I think you have to pay something for coming to this lunch, and so the biggest banquet we're going to have, a banquet of democracy, that Hong Kong people will show to the world that how committed we are to democracy. About the topic given to me, that will Hong Kong ever have a genuine democracy? I'll try to look at it from analyzing that from four factors or entities. And two of the entities or factors are related with the demand side, and the two of the factors will be related with the supply side. So it is a kind of demand and supply analysis. The first factor, that whether Hong Kong will ever have a genuine democracy, is the people of Hong Kong. If you have no demand for democracy, I think no one will be going to give you democracy. And so there must be a strong demand among Hong Kong people that we want democracy. So one major factor that will affect whether Hong Kong will ever have genuine democracy is that whether Hong Kong people really want democracy. And also not just wanting democracy, it's how strong, how determined you are for democracy. Now, from past polls and surveys, we know that at least 60% of Hong Kong people throughout the years show that they want democracy. And we have wanted democracy for so many years. And I was a student in the 80s of the last century. I was a part of this democratic movement. And throughout the years, we have more people joining and are willing to do something more about the democracy of Hong Kong. But just that, are we strong enough? The determination, the want we have, is it strong enough? We have organized big rallies, 500,000 people in 2003, but it seems that a rally will not be strong enough to get democracy for Hong Kong. So now that big banquet we are organizing, maybe an opportunity for Hong Kong people to show their determination, their strong determination, or how strong is that determination. Now, if you ask me, I will give you a very diplomatic response that I have confidence that we will have 10,000 people there. And I surely have that confidence that we'll have 10,000 people at least there next week joining the banquet. But would that 10,000 be strong enough? Maybe we still have to have more. And it is also something that I also have to wait and see. What happened next week at that banquet day? How many people will be there? How long can they stay? How many of them will be prepared to be arrested, to sacrifice their personal freedom in showing their determination to the world, to China, to all the other Hong Kong people that we want democracy? So that's the first factor. Even if we, after the last week, next week's action, that we may not be able to change the standing committee's decision immediately. But we could have that very strong determination shown. I personally, I have the confidence that one day, not knowing that what the day, when will be that date, it depends on the supply side that I'll further and analyze, that democracy will come to Hong Kong. So that's the first factor about in all this democratic movement is the people. Because democracy is for them and by them and of them. And so one very important factor is how determined and how strong is that determination. This morning, I was in a radio phone-in program. There was an old gentleman called in and just talking about this coming banquet. And he said that his whole family, four persons, his two children, they are all doctors, and they are coming to this banquet. And that's given me a lot of hope that we'll be able to have that strong determination shown to the world. So that's the first factor. Okay, cannot have a simple answer that how strong would that be? We have to see. The second factor will be, again, on the demand side, is the democratic forces in Hong Kong. What I'm talking about, the democratic forces, they are more organized in their actions for democracy in Hong Kong. Surely the pan-democratic camp political parties with seats in the Legislative Council will be a part of this democratic force. And also the civil society organizations. There are many civil society organizations. They are also working in the same direction. And surely the Occupy Central movement as a part of this democratic movement, also a major democratic force. The students, they are now organizing their class boycott. They are also playing a key role. And they are also a part, one of those important democratic forces. Now, these democratic forces, I think they have already shown their determination for democracy. But one thing is more important is not just that their determination, but how organized they can be, or how united they can be. Now, that is the biggest challenge to democratic development in Hong Kong. That in the past few years, actually the democratic forces were very divided. We have the radical wing, we have the moderate wing among the pandemic democratic parties. The democratic parties, the parties, seems not to have a good connection with the civil society organizations. So again, show a kind of distrust within the or among the different democratic forces. So in the future, we need to have a united platform for all these different democratic forces to come together, to be united in fighting for democracy for Hong Kong. Now, surely, all the different democratic forces, they might have their own goal or the ultimate goal they want to achieve. For example, the students want civil nomination. But some of the political parties, they can accept a system without civil nomination on the condition that that can satisfy international standard on universal suffrage. So they may have may be different on the ultimate goal, the kind of system they want. And also the relationship between a democratic election system and the policies of the government. Should we also include concerns about like social welfare in our fight for democracy? they're also divided on this point. And also, well, what should be the strategy in fighting for democracy? So people want it to be faster. We want to actually, I have been criticized in the past months that I organized this Occupy Central movement as too slow, that actually we should occupy earlier, then we may have a better chance of getting universal suffrage for Hong Kong. But now we are planning to have that at the end. So we are quite divided on the views on the strategy on how to achieve our goals, even if we can agree with the same goal. So how we can, I think the challenge is that how the different democratic forces can join together with the differences, but still able to reach a consensus on the goal, the strategy, and all the other things that in fighting for democracy. Now, that is a big challenge. In the past 20 months, the Occupy Central movement played more a role of being a hub of all the different democratic forces. And we tried to kind of work out something that we're able to unite all the different forces. Successful sometime, fail sometime. We try very hard. And I hope that we can still be able to maintain this united front. Okay, the term used it more by the communists. That until, at least up to the point of our first Occupy Central, that will be the coming Civil Disobedience Act, that banquet. But what happened after? Now that will be the big challenge. Maybe this Occupy Central movement would have fulfilled its historical task after the first Occupy Central. What will happen afterward? What may be a new platform that will be able to unite all the different democratic forces will be something critical in the demand side, that whether we can, because we have the people, even if they have very strong determination, that you still need to have the democratic forces to organize them or kind of coordinating them so that they can join together to join actions to express our demand. So it's important for the different democratic forces in Hong Kong. They're able to kind of develop a platform for everyone to be able to join together. But I still see a lot of hope there, even though I understand that maintaining such a united front will be a challenging task. But that's still something, I think, especially through the work of the Occupy Central in the past months, that we have developed very important tools that will be able to coordinate and join all the different forces and the people wanting democracy together in Hong Kong. Now, we have organized free deliberative meetings in the past months. This kind of experiences of organizing deliberative meetings for people joining together to discuss and then try our best to come up with some kind of consensus on issues, this is a very important experience of the civil society of Hong Kong. And the second thing is this civil referendum we have organized in June. It's a kind of a direct democracy, allowing people to directly express their views on matters. And we do not need the government to organize referendum. The civil society can organize a civil referendum ourselves. So that is a very important tool for the civil society or for the different democratic forces in Hong Kong. And the third tool is not yet made, but it was going. We're going to see it. That is the occupation. Actually, that's a lot of work in organizing this occupation. This one will be the most organized occupation, I don't know, at least it's in Hong Kong. We have different teams of people working on that. We have our team of a marshals or picket team, and to taking care of the order within the banquet. And we have a lawyer team, though it's not directly under the Occupy Central, but a group of lawyers that they want to really join together And they have worked out a very complicated system to ensure anyone arrested will be given the chance to will have the legal assistance. And we have a medical team of around 200 persons there, ready to take care or providing humanitarian care to anyone in the banquet. And we have a social workers team to provide counseling to anyone in the banquet. And we have even a pastor team providing kind of spiritual advices to anyone, any Christians, in the banquet. So it's a very organized action. And so that will be also a very important tool for the civil society, that we can assemble people together in a way to demonstrate our determination. So that's the second factor on the demand side. The two other factors or entities, they are on the supply side. The first one is the poor establishment camp, or more specific, the business people or the business tycoons, how they see the development of the system in Hong Kong. Now, under the present system, our first chief executive just then leading a team of tycoons visiting Beijing, I think I'm talking about people like them, that now they enjoy all the political privileges of the existing system. So surely, if I were them, I would like to keep the political privileges, right? There's no way that I should give up my political privileges because I'm enjoying the political privileges. So why I have to give up my political privileges? But I hope that they could understand that under a system where some people can enjoy political privileges, that does not guarantee that you will be always the one enjoying those privileges. So we just look back to the system of Hong Kong. Before 1997, who enjoyed the political privileges of the system? The British capital. The British companies. Okay? And after the transfer of sovereignty, the Hong Kong capital, I call them the Blue capital, they are still enjoying all these political privileges. But just, I hope that they can see someday, or actually, that may be already happening, the red capital is coming. Would someday the political privileges they are now enjoying will have to be shared or even have to be given to the red capital? So that is something I hope that the business tycoons can consider. And how to protect their own interests. So we have a big market here, a political market, a market of democracy. It is better to invest in this market first, so you can have be the market leaders, especially when the red capital is not yet investing in this market. So what will be better than supporting a democratic system in Hong Kong? So that is what I say the supply side, that whether they surely have a major influence in the development of Hong Kong's democracy. Their stance will affect how Beijing see the matter. But if they are far-sighted enough, seeing that any system allowing some people to enjoy political privileges, how to ensure that you will be the person enjoying? If you cannot, especially it is the one who allocate the privileges will be deciding the matter, then as a rational investor, why not have an investment in another market to ensure that you will be able to get at least return from that? So that it will be a very important factor affecting the democratic development in Hong Kong, that whether the business sectors will be able to see this kind of challenges. The fourth factor, surely I know that you know that who will be this fourth factor or the entity, surely is Beijing. Beijing having the the final say on all things. So Beijing must be the one influence the supply. The Standing Committee's decision actually say that, well, the kind of democracy we can have will be a kind of Iranian democracy, and that's not a genuine one. Now, whether China or Beijing will allow Hong Kong to have genuine democracy, this is something very difficult to say, especially China. The Chinese politics is still not transparent enough. That's very difficult to make any kind of very good analysis. Now, but I just based on some common sense to analyze the matter. Now, any government, if they want to govern a place, there are only three kind of resources that can rely on. The first is economic incentives. So after 2003, after Tung Chee Hwa was under that pressure and resigned in 2005, how Beijing tried to kind of get back the support of Hong Kong people is by offering a lot of economic incentives to Hong Kong people. But we see that it failed. Up to this point, still a lot of Hong Kong people still are not patriotic enough according to the Chinese standard. The second resources that they can use is coercive power. Now, maybe now Beijing is prepared to be more strong hand, and they want to, well, we are organizing the banquet. Well, will they send in the army or not? I don't know. But just that using coercive powers to govern. Now, these two resources have been used by many governments to govern, and China maybe is still also using these two main resources in governing their own society. Economic incentives. If you have high growth rate, everyone will be able to share in this growth, economic growth. You get the people will be supporting the government. And surely China has used a lot of coercive power to maintain the rule. But both resources actually, they are very expensive. They're very expensive. And many governments relied on mainly the third resources, that is legitimacy. Legitimacy is something that people want to really accept the rule, not based on economic incentives, not based on coercive threat, but just that they want to really accept the authority because they consider the authority is proper and therefore legitimate. And this is a much cheaper resources to govern. Now, that is the problem, that in Hong Kong, if economic incentives will not be efficient or effective enough in getting the support of Hong Kong people, and if coercive power would not be effective also, or would be very expensive, then the only resource that China can rely on is legitimacy. But how to make our government legitimate in a society like Hong Kong, an international city so globalized? The only chance is that the government is democratically elected. Now, but whether China will be able to see that or accept that, it will also depend very much on the internal politics of China. Actually, similar problems have been now encountered by the Chinese government within China, also facing the legitimacy crisis, but now still able to rely on the economic incentives and the coercive power to maintain its governance. But can the economic growth continue? And also, we have to think about the Chinese society is also changing, that how Chinese people see the authority, what they consider to be legitimate. Now, maybe 1,000 years ago, an emperor will be considered as a legitimate authority, as the mandate, with the mandate of heaven, the son of heaven. But I don't think anyone in China now will accept any emperor or any kings. So people also change their views about what is legitimate. Maybe still, Chinese people within China, they may not see, consider that a good performance of the government will be able to give legitimacy to the government. But someday, don't know when, someday, that even Chinese people may consider that a government must be, they must have participation, or a government that must protect their rights before they can have the legitimacy. The time will come. That is the process of globalization. Now, if our Chinese leaders, they are also far-sighted enough to see that, they will have to think seriously about political reform in China. And this reform may involve certain form of electoral reform. Now, but I'm not saying that China will have democratic elections in the coming 10 or 20 years. What I'm saying is that if China is far-sighted enough, or our leaders is far-sighted enough, to see that there may be a chance that China need to introduce some form of election into its own system. I'm talking about genuine election, not the Iranian kind. And from the experience of China, that in testing or testing some ideas, they will have a pilot test at some place. So throughout the whole China, where will be the best place to have this pilot test of electoral reform? I cannot think of any other place except Hong Kong. And so if our Chinese leaders, they are far-sighted enough to see the need for introducing political reform, including electoral reform, in their own system, but they are not going to do it immediately, but they're going to have some pilot test at some place in China, and that may be Hong Kong, then Hong Kong might have that chance. So the four factors they have analyzed, that the people and the democratic forces on the demand side, the business sectors in Hong Kong and Beijing at the supply side. After Occupy Central, the first Occupy Central, that big banquet, Hong Kong will enter into a new era in the democratic movement or the political development. And there will be interactions among these four different factors or entities. And I'm talking more from a perspective of an academic, so I'm just doing an analysis of the matters that I cannot foretell that what may be the situation. But from a more activist perspective, that is, I'm now taking my another head as an activist, that I would say that I have full confidence that if Hong Kong people can show their strong demand for democracy, and if that can be organized through a united front of the democratic forces in Hong Kong, that will generate pressure and also maybe even incentives for the supply side to seriously consider whether genuine democracy should be introduced in Hong Kong. Surely no simple answer to all these things. So this, I'm now putting back my professional or academic head, that in any conclusion of any academic paper, the academics will be saying that, oh, everything is possible. Okay, thank you.
Benny, thank you very much. We have time for a Q&A. If you would raise your hand, Florence is already there. We'll come around with a microphone and take your question. Please give us your name and organization. We will start with Florence de Changy.
Thank you very much. Mr. Tang, could you tell us what would you rate or what would make your banquet a success? Is it the number of people who joined? You said 10,000, but you said 100,000 for the referendum, and you got 800. So is that the number? Is it the way they will behave? And the second question, if I may, is how much support do you find you get from the media, the Hong Kong media, and mainly the Hong Kong media?
Okay. The banquet, okay, to be successful, firstly, the scale. That is the number of people participating. And, well, a few days ago, I woke up at around 4 a.m. that because I was in a dream, and then suddenly I woke up. But some image of the dream could still remember that last image in the dream. In that dream, I see people in Central, and people crowded from the City Hall to the Queen's Road Central. All over people there. Well, I hope that I can see that in the real world, the scale. But I think also important is the manner of the whole thing being delivered. I think it's important for a civil disobedience action to maintain that nonviolent spirit. We are trying very hard to ensure that we have people trained to maintain order. And also we have this manual for everyone, including things you should take to the banquet, and also some basic principles. So that will be a thing that I think is important, or judging whether the banquet is successful, the scale and the manner of participation. About the support of the media, well, it's difficult to say. As we know that the local media, to the Occupy Central movement, most of them, they are rather critical, except one or one and a half, okay, maybe the local newspaper, more favorable to us. But I think it's no matter what's the stance of the newspaper or the TV channel, if we are doing something that is significant, they have to report. And they at least, no matter how they kind of edit the expression, my speech, if the message can still be, I think the message can still be sent to Hong Kong people. And so the thing is that whether we can organize a big event, if we can, then we're still able to communicate the message through the media, no matter what's the stand, to Hong Kong people.
We have two questions from the veranda. We'll start with Sherry, and then.
Hi, thank you. You mentioned yourself that you've come under some criticism for not moving quickly enough and giving the opposition time to build up and really gather forces against the movement. And I wonder if this were 6 or 8 months ago, looking back, if you were starting again now, what would you do differently?
Well, I think that's we move not as fast as some people expected. It's not merely just my plan or what. It's actually that the whole thing. If you have to have, as I say, as I mentioned, that the success of the action is the scale and the way of participating. Until the decision of the standing committee. As I already mentioned, the democratic forces, they were divided on a lot of issues. So they are not able to be united in a way that we can organize such a big-scale event. So it's no choice, actually. Even if I want to have the action earlier, we will not be able to have that number of people joining together, because we will not be able to unite all the different democratic forces. But actually, what makes all so united is the Standing Committee. Actually, the Standing Committee calls everyone to be so united now. And we are working together, the radical wing and the moderate wing, we are working together. And also the civil society organizations. So I think it's just impossible to say, now, 6 months ago, what we do. I think that that 6 months ago, the situation would still be the same, that we're not going to be united to support and sustain such an action to make it successful. So at the end, I still have to do it now, when there was a decision by the Standing Committee, or actually our plan is that decision may come later, by the government when the government put forward the proposal. So we'll have a little bit more time for negotiation. But just then, the decision comes earlier, and so we have our action earlier.
We have another question on the veranda.
Benny, I'm Robin Wong. I'm retired already, so I'm not in any organization. But I think I've been talking to a lot of Hong Kong people. I mean, Hong Kong is already highly polarized in a way, you know, the two sides of it. And a lot of people just think, okay, I mean, on one side, you have a noble cause. But on the other side, people are worried about the livelihood, about the economics, and the amount of disruption, you know, you'll be causing. And the more you do, the more radical such approaches you do, you're also actually causing China to be even tightened, hardened their stand. And you know, have you ever assessed the actual risk you are actually the risk in Hong Kong that you are imposing? Because you know, let's say it, you know, Hong Kong is probably one of the best cities in the world already. I was talking to just a friend of mine here, and they say, well, I mean, where can you guys find a better city? You know, so. You come in and then you know, all during this process, there will be a lot of disruptions, a lot of, well, how you assess the risk, you know, on the long term?
Well, surely that we have considered the risk. I think you're talking about the risk of causing disorder during the action or during our banquet, and also the long term. Now, our estimation that the occupation may last for a few days, and the disruption will be there, but I think it's still bearable because it is not kind of a total paralyze of the city. It's just the certain part of Central only, and only for a few days, and knowing that part of that period will be public holidays, and so the kind of disruption will be, I think I would say, there must be disruption, and that is also any civil disobedience action aims to cause disruption so as to cause the civil disobedience be arrested in order to generate that social awakening. So there must be disruption. But we'll try to strike a balance. The disruption will be just up to that extent. Okay. So the short-term disruption, I think, will be bearable. But about the long-term thing, well, from my analysis that I put forward just then, in order for Hong Kong to develop, okay, and we must be able to have a consensus within the society on how we should proceed. Now, do you think this decision by the Standing Committee can win the consensus of the different groups in Hong Kong? I don't think so. Even if we say that all the pan-democrats are okay, they give up their views, I don't think that can get really a consensus for the society. Now, our action, in a way, is to show to Beijing. Now, you have to think seriously. This is a Hong Kong that you are now governing. In economic incentives will not be successful in bribing the Hong Kong people to be patriotic. Coercive force surely cannot. This only way is to have a legitimate government. Think about how to establish a legitimate government. Oh, if you say that genuine democracy may not be the way, provide as a solution. Consensus is only with consensus we can advance. Hong Kong may be quite good now, but we are facing all the competitions. If you want to sustain the achievement we have now, not to say that we further advance, just to sustain, we need to have a consensus with the society. How to reach that consensus? We need a legitimate government. How to have a legitimate government? You just tell me without democratic election. You just tell me. We are not talking about a city in China. We're talking about an international city like Hong Kong. So globalized, with people in Hong Kong showing their strong determination for democracy. How can you have a legitimate government without democratic election? Just you tell me. If you can provide a solution, China can provide a solution to that, and can convince me, surely I will say, but just that I cannot see a chance of that, at least from my research and study, that I just cannot see any other way. Now, but don't misread me that democracy will solve everything. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that democracy will provide the additional resources, that is the legitimacy, for the government to govern. And still you need good policies. You still need ways to reach consensus within the society. So it is only the starting point rather than the end point. So more work has to be done after we have universal suffrage. But just without universal suffrage, I have a big doubt that how Hong Kong can maintain, not to say advance.
We have a question right here.
Thanks, Benny. This is Greg Terode of Reuters. In terms of next steps and civil disobedience, after you finish 2 or 3 days of occupying Central, are you already thinking of perhaps escalating or adapting your program of civil disobedience, so we'll see many things more in the next few months? Thanks.
Well, the post-Occupy Central era is an issue. I think it's still under debate. While we are occupying, actually we have a lot of time, and we have thousands of people there, and we will have a deliberation there on issues about the post-occupying era. And I have called that an era of disobedience. But disobedience does not necessarily involve resistance every time. Now, a Occupy Central is more an action of resistance. It is a kind of disobedience, but it's also involving resistance. But we can disobey things without very strong resistance. And actually, some academics have already made a suggestion, and it's worth to further develop it, that we can have disobedience actions, but without a lot of resistance. Though we are prepared to do that. Once we have done the first occupation, it will be much easier for us to do the second and the third, because we have the experience. But whether we need to use this action, as I mentioned, we have many tools. We have the deliberation, we have the civil referendum, and we have the occupation. Now, what might be things we can do? Actually, an academic in Hong Kong has suggested that Hong Kong people should have our own charter, a Hong Kong charter, and we can have all the organized deliberative meetings. We can have the civil society groups, the academics in a particular area, the political parties join together and draft a charter on, like, social welfare, on environmental protection, the system of government, all areas. And then we can have our own charter. And this charter, after deliberative meetings, and we can put it to be voted in a civil referendum. And if this charter is accepted by thousands and thousands of Hong Kong people through the civil referendum, this will be the platform that can be used by a chief executive elected by Hong Kong people through the civil referendum. So we have an official chief executive. Now, he or she will be elected by that election committee of only 1,200 persons, because we are going to veto that government proposal. No one person, one vote, only using the 2012 system. 1,200 votes. So I'm also got, he or she got 1,200 votes. And then we can use our own methods of our own election system or methods, and then elect a chief executive, a shadow chief executive, and through the civil referendum, and this person may be getting 800,000 votes or even more.
So will you run for shadow chief executive?
No, that's another story. And then this shadow chief executive with the shadow cabinet with the Hong Kong charter, which have been endorsed by Hong Kong people, can be a check on the government. And that is how we disobey. We can disobey in a way that need not involving a lot of resistance. But that's a disobedience. It's a way of disobeying, because it's a kind of parallel government we can run. Now, surely we are not running the actual society, but we are putting checks on the government, and that will be something we can do. That's But I think it's just an idea from an academic. So how that can be further developed and implemented, that's a lot of things to look at. And we may, there may be also groups, they will continue to use more actions of resistance, and like occupying Central, occupying Mongkok, or occupying what. There may be many such actions happen. But that is also the challenge of not us, but the government.
I'm afraid we've gone 2 o'clock, so we're going to have to end here. I know Benny Tai will be around to take questions if you want to come forward afterwards. I'd like to thank Benny Tai for coming to speak at the club. We do have a small gift from the FCC. I confess it is a tie, and I'm not sure if you'll be wearing it over the next few days.
I've not been tie for many years already.
But we do hope you'll come join us for a pint after the banquet.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. And again, Benny Tai will be here for a while to answer more questions.